This is Wine, Women, and Revolution with your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. Hi, and welcome to Wine, Women, and Revolution. I'm your host, Heather Warburton, coming at you here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. You can find us online at www.njrevolutionradio.com, and you can listen to us anywhere that you find podcasts now, or even on iTunes now. So please like, subscribe, follow us on Facebook, on Twitter, we're on Pinterest now, we're on Instagram. Share our stuff, help us out. Today, I have to admit, I'm going to be fangirling a little bit over my guest today. Today, I have a poet, a spoken word artist, and you know how sometimes you feel like somebody has like a little mirror and they're looking into your soul and like finding the words that are etched on your soul and just speaking them out loud? That's kind of the reaction I had with my guest today the first time I heard her. I'd like to welcome to the show, Fleazy Malay. Welcome.
Hi, Heather.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's quite late here, so I'm tired, but I'm still on the manageable end of it. So
that's good. Yeah, she's coming to us from Melbourne today. It's 7 a.m. here for me, but it's almost 9 there for you? Or
yeah, it's 9 o'clock for me, which is pretty late when you have a four-year-old.
So the first time I heard your poem was the poem Witches. Uplift had done a video of you performing that, which of course I'll link in the show notes for people to see that. But it was an extremely moving and powerful poem. And I'd really like to know what your thoughts were when you were writing that. What were you trying to go for?
It's an interesting one. Sometimes I have a concept that I'm trying to get down, and sometimes it's like the concept is trying to get me down. I'm not thinking about it. It's just the words are flying through, and that's what happened with that poem. The concept of no, an outward no being an inward yes, is something that I've carried for many years in my work and in my own life. But the wholeness of the poem, I was driving to meet a friend of mine. And the lines just started pouring into my head as they are in the poem, unedited. And I was trying to remember each line as it came in. And I was like driving through Melbourne city traffic, trying to get to this meeting with a friend of mine. And have you seen the Elizabeth Gilbert TEDx where she talks about the genie, concept of genies?
No, I haven't, but it sounds interesting.
It's an amazing TEDx. I can't remember what it's called, but she... She basically talks about, I think Tom Waits, he was driving along and a song started coming into his head, and he just spoke out to the universe and was like, you know what? This is a bad time to send me a song. If you want me to have a song, universe, you're going to fucking wait. You're going to wait until I get to somewhere appropriate. And if you don't, then I'm just not taking the song. and what happened is he waited, the song waited, and then later on it came through and he wrote it down. So I was like, right, well, this is a poem that needs to be heard. It clearly is burning its way into my soul right now. And I was driving along and I just said out loud, I was like, I'm going to go for a full time wait too. And I was like, look, universe, if you want me to have this poem, you're going to wait. This is not an appropriate moment for a poem. So I pulled over, I wrote down what I had and walked into the cafe, met my friend. And then I went off into the toilet. And as I sat down to go to the toilet in this cafe, the more of the poem started pouring in my head. I was like, stop, this is not the time, okay? I'm busy. But by the time I got home from that coffee date, it was on. And I literally walked in the front of my house, sat down at my computer and just wrote it out as it is on the recording, word for word pretty much. And from there, yeah, so I don't really feel like I don't feel like I had an idea of what I wanted to say necessarily, more that something needed to be said.
Right. And, yeah. And that's probably why it was so powerful, that it wasn't it was a reaction to everything going on in the universe.
And actually 3 days after I wrote it was the Me Too campaign began.
Oh,
so it was a very, very potent, I think it was something that was bubbling under the surface for a lot of people around that time. And for different people, it came up in different ways. And for me, because I actually didn't post in the Me Too thing, I kind of took a bit of a back foot with it. I work a lot in women's work and speaking up about all kinds of things. And for some reason, I think probably because it's, I think for a lot of women, it really hit home, Me Too. And for some women, that gave them a real invitation to step up towards it. And for me, it made me just want to hide from the whole world because it was all too real, mm-hmm. all too true. I turned off social media. And for me to turn off social media is massive. I'm a double Gemini. I'm like all over social media. So I turned off my social media. I shut off my computer of the world and just had to like step away from it for a few days. But I think my need to was that poem.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You had already gotten it out, but even not knowing what was coming.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a very interesting, the Me Too movement was so empowering for some people that this is my chance to say, okay, yeah, I'm part of this. And then some people, it was very triggering, for lack of a better word, that they had to, wow, okay, this is everywhere. I can't be a part of this right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with untold stories. I mean, there's the beautiful Maya Angelou quote, which is, I think it's something along the lines of there's no burden, there's no greater burden than an untold story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that with the Me Too campaign, what happened is there was a lot of women who were carrying untold stories, stories that they've never allowed themselves to speak or never felt safe to speak in the world. And when you have something like the Me Too campaign come around where women are basically given permission to share the truth, which is something we're not given often in this world. And I think what that did was give a lot of women permission to tell their stories. And so the floodgates opened. And some of the posts that were going up were so long with these detailed stories. And on one hand, it's so incredible that this is finally being talked about. And I think on some level, it kind of had to happen for people to really, even other women, to understand the scope. Because I genuinely don't believe, I don't think I've ever met any woman who hasn't been sexually harassed in some way.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely harassed.
Yeah. Has received some level of sexual harassment or mistreatment, and I think that became pretty obvious for a lot of people through the Me Too campaign for people. But in that then is also the question of like, well, do we have to parade our scars and our wounds every time we want to be heard?
Right.
Is that what it takes? Does it take every woman to stand up and rip herself open and share the pain for the sake of other people going, oh, okay, all right, I'll listen to you now, rather than just listening to us in the first place?
So. Right. That is definitely, women are not believed, especially women of color, that just society's like, oh, I think you're lying, or I don't think it's as big of a deal as you're saying it is. You know, I don't know about as much as in Australia, but toxic masculinity is definitely rampant in the United States these days.
Oh, man. I think in almost every westernized country in the world, and it has different cultural forms of showing up. I've been in Australia for 5 years, and there's a typical Aussie male. You know, he's not that much different from the typical English bloke, you know, and there's definitely level, not that all men are toxic at all, but there's a flavor, an aroma, or an expectation to live up to that has an essence of toxicity or shadow to it. Disrespect. I'm just gonna go straight up and say it. Just disrespect that runs through it, and privilege, like deservingness of being able to be a certain way, which I think is imbibed into a lot of the way that a lot of men have been taught that they can or should be. And I think that's really what it boils down to. It's not necessarily innately in men. It's in how we're being taught and how people are being taught.
Oh, I absolutely believe that human nature is a changeable thing, and it's how you're taught and what the culture you're living in seeps into you and forms who you are. And our culture is toxic. So it just makes sense that people would be toxic. Like the other night, I was at an event, a political event, and there was, you know, the older cis white hetero male told a trans woman that it was time for her to stop talking and that it was his turn to talk. You know, it's that very, like, you're just used to having all this space, so someone challenging you for that space is triggers something in a lot of guys, which was what I loved was your in this poem, you talk about the power of a woman who says no.
Mm.
And that was very resonant.
Yeah, I think for me that the strength of the word no, I think the power of reclaiming the word no, perhaps is where I'm going with this, is that for a lot of my life as a woman, in different ways, I've been taught that I shouldn't say no because it's impolite. It's not nice to say no. It's not, if you say no sexually, then you're just, if you've been a tease, if you say no, on a business level, you're being a bitch. If you say no, you're not being friendly. And the women, I've been brought up, and I think a lot of women have been brought up to be consumable, to taste good. That's what nice is. When someone's being nice, you are being in a way which is easy to digest for other people. And that might not necessarily be truth. It's a lie a lot of the time, the niceness. And the problem with no is it's not nice. So a lot of women haven't been allowed to say no because it's not consumable. It's not what people want to hear. And in that, I think for many years, I even held this concept that I shouldn't say no. And it was only when I reframed it to myself, I think I was in my early 20s when I had the kind of, I'm in my early 30s now, so when I had this little like moment that saying no externally is actually a yes to myself. And who do I want to be saying yes on it? But when it's sometimes saying yes externally is actually saying no to myself, mm-hmm. to my soul, to my heart, to my body. And I think only now in my 30s, especially after having had a kid and having to learn really what not being able to say no feels like on a day-to-day, non-stop, 24/7 basis. Because when you've got a kid, especially for the first few months, there is this complete, you surrender yourself, you surrender your identity for the goodness of another. But I don't think that's sustainable over a long period of time. I don't think it's healthy. And I think a lot of women and mothers have been taught that that's what they're expected to do for the rest of their lives. You know, exactly. That because we have to do that in those first few months, that is actually a symbolism of how we should be in the whole of life or something. I don't know where that comes from. But it made me really realize that actually how important it is to say yes to myself, not say no to myself, for my own mental health, for the health of my connection with my daughter, for my connection with other, with my lovers, for my connection with life. So I think no is a very underestimated word.
And it seems like being your authentic self is something you're very passionate about. You even do speaking classes about how to be vulnerable and authentic and real and speak with passion. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So for me, being able to speak our truth is more than just speaking the words that we believe, but it's how we speak it. It's how we say what we say. For example, being nice. Going back to that, it's something that we are like, it manifests in our voice. It, like, our voice comes up. So when we're being nice, we're up here. And even when we're angry, I'm angry at you. Like a lot of us are nice, even in our anger, and we're nice when we're pissed off. And what I really want to help people with, and what my courses and programs do, is really about that, giving us permission to just be real in our voice. And actually what happens is people listen to you more. The more honest you're prepared to be, the more people are actually going to listen to us. But we have been brought up to believe the opposite. And it's destroying us. It's destroying our capacity to be heard. It's destroying our capacity to hear ourselves and to also have any faith in our own worth, any faith in our own sense of self, any faith in our own, well, who am I to stand up and take up space? Who am I to feel to impose my voice on these people? These sorts of mindsets are ones that I come across a lot in my work and even in myself. That's how I've got into doing this stuff. And so for me, my programs, I've been running various ones for the last five years now. Yeah. And it really is about that. It's about letting go of the masks, letting go of the nice, letting go of the whatever consumable nature we've been hiding, whether it's shyness or confidence or any of it. And actually just being honest about who we are. And noticing the profound effect that that has on our sense of self and on the world's sense of us.
Absolutely. I wish I'd found your classes before I had to start public speaking. It was a challenge to get to be able to do that. That the first couple of times I almost cried on stage. I was so just the pressure and the nerves got to me that, mm-hmm. you know, so this would have been good to have a few years ago. I wish I'd discovered sooner.
And it's not surprising, you know, it's vulnerable. It's really vulnerable standing up there and sharing your heart. And vulnerability is this beautiful, tender, but quite painful place to be in if you're not used to it. And I think that, it's courageous. It's a courageous thing to stand up there and talk, even if you're nervous or scared or shaking or whatever it is that's going on for you. So well done for doing that.
I found Xanax helps a lot nowadays. But
I wouldn't personally necessarily recommend that for every speaking occasion, but it helps, you know, it's just what you're needing.
So your classes are called RISE?
Yeah, RISE Speaker Training.
And where can people find that if they're interested in signing up for it?
My website, fleecymalay.com.
And they start in October, I believe you were saying?
Well, yeah. So the online program is it's a 7-week program. And you sign up, you can sign up at any time and you'll start getting the 6 weeks kind of their videos and PDFs. And there's an online group and community that you join. And that instantly you start getting the course sent to you over the 7 weeks. But then every now and then I actually sit down and run a live round with anyone who's already signed up can join in. And we do webinars. I do one or two a week for 7 weeks where people come in and we actually talk our way through all the seven classes. And we do it together as a group. So even if there's people who did the last round who are like, yes, I'm in for the next round as well. So yeah, the next one's early October.
I can imagine that's got some amazingly positive energy in it. That must be a great group that you put together there.
It's such an incredible group of people, and it's international as well. We have people in the States, we have people in England and Germany and Australia. Yeah, it's really been wonderful to see this international family coming together of people. It's mostly women. There is one guy in there at the moment, but it's mostly women. But people who are just really ready to support each other, to open up and rise and share their voices, especially marginalized voices. You know, me as a queer woman and women of color in the group, and just, you know, people for even like, you know, your cis white man that you're talking about earlier, you know, as a human being, as a man, especially talking about your feelings and talking your truth is not something that you're actually invited to do very often as well. And it's part of the reason there is such toxicity. And so I think that, that every single human, no matter what your identity is, in some way there is some part of us that is carrying a trauma or a sense of marginalization, a sense of being shut down by society. And for us to break those, to break whoever we are, to break those or to have, and to be given safe spaces to be seen in the areas that have been shut down is really, really important. So that's what I like to hope RISE is for people as well. It's not just a series of insights and exercises into your own voice, but also a safe space to step forward and share that voice.
And I think that helps build real connections. Like the society that we live in, I obviously, being an anti-capitalist, would blame capitalism a lot, but it's just a very isolating society, and we don't have those human bonds like we're meant to. We evolved to be social creatures, and then everyone's isolated and you don't share your stories, you don't, you know, share your emotions with others. It's always just this perfunctory, oh, how are you? I'm fine. You know, it's kind of the only social interaction you really get. So breaking out of that is something I'm also very passionate about.
Mm. You're one of those people that starts up conversations at the checkout, aren't you?
Well, people just like to talk to me at checkout. Like, I don't know, open up around me and start telling me like their life stories.
That's great. I'm in full support of that. Do it. Change the world one checkout at a time.
I like that. That is definitely a... let's see. Also, you've done some TEDx talks recently, right? You just did two back to back.
Yeah, I did. I did two back to back. Not recommended to anybody to take the most, you know, to take your biggest profile event and do two of them back to back. It's the pressure there.
But people can find those online as well.
So, yeah, so the first one's already online. That's on my website, and you can find it on YouTube if you just type Fleecy TEDx, and it's called Why Your Words Are More Powerful Than You Think. And it's really speaking to this stuff. It's speaking to my experience running Mother Tongue, which is the woman spoken word event that I run in Melbourne. And I've been running that for 5 years, and just seeing what happens when women have a safe space to share their stories, it's profound. It's actually profound what happens in that space. And so my TEDx is me kind of unpacking the three things that I see happen to people when a woman gets up and shares her story with vulnerability, and how we can actually take that out into our lives to begin to make changes because of this, like you're saying, this isolation that we have, how communities are so different now to what they've ever been. So breaking down that loneliness, creating connection.
I love
it. My second TEDx currently isn't up, but by the time this goes out, it may well be saying that. But it's called, what did I call it? It might be called something like how being face blind helped me see people. And so it's a much more personal story. It's my story around having prosopagnosia, which is face blindness, which means that I don't recognize faces, and not all faces, but there's a large percentage of faces that I don't recognize very easily. And this TEDx Melbourne asked me to come in and speak about it. And what I did was, what I really had to do was unpack my experience of having this disability that I've never had to unpack before. I'd never had to look at it. And really realizing how deeply ingrained that this experience is to the work that I do and to connection. How, as somebody who all of my artwork, all of my career work is around creating connection or exploring connection, and yet I have a disability that actually physically impedes connection. And really unpacking that and looking at what is the thing that I learned from that, from having this condition.
I think for so many people, the thing that would be considered their weakness ends up being one of their biggest strengths. Like, that probably shaped you into making these, you know, speaking about connections so much. That kind of stuff really does, you know, it probably, you have that for a reason. And that's so that you can really inspire this connection in other people because you've had to go through it.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. You have agreed to do a poem for us. I specifically requested one of my favorites, that being Poppy. Would you like to start that now? Or
I'd love to do that. I'd like to talk a little bit to it if we have a few minutes,
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I'd love to ask you, because you're in the States, yeah? You're in America. So do we have time afterwards to talk about it, or should we talk about it before?
We can do whatever you'd like. I told you, this is a free form show.
I know. It's called Tall Poppy, and you said that it really spoke to you, and I'm actually interested why did the poem speak to you?
Well, obviously the sunflower thing, you know, when I don't want to, let's talk about it after, actually. I'd rather not.
Okay. All right. We'll talk about it afterwards. Okay. Well, here we go then. I'll give you the poem and then we'll talk about it.
Okay.
She was 14. She was born with dreams of stardom. She'd already mastered the art of slalom to dodge the bullets thrown by the harsh tongues of adolescence. Spirit palace. Her mind sharp, with a curious heart, she was the perfect target. She danced. She spent her days entranced with the flickering of unreachable stars. They called her Poppy. Spent their days trying to cut her down. Eventually they didn't miss, they hit, she split down the center, caught in the rift between reality and dreams, she fell and hit the ground. No longer she danced. Spent her days in trance with visions of soaring high and studying grass, she walked, oh, smoke paved paths. They called her Poppy, so she'd fallen her ass. But her roots were deep. So she took to the street where her wit could save her from defeat. Her arms stretched, her thumb took sharper path. Her backpack carried heavy maps that carved their mark upon her heart. She touched the star. The fallen ones, just like her. Where needles and smoke rings have become the cure. All stretched on cardboard beds, all lost and found in the hearts and the head, all called Poppy, just like her. Each one cut before their prime, symptoms of a society that just isn't quite right. I mean, really, when did it become such a crime to shine? Poppy stared into the eyes of fallen flowers, all doped up on reasons to escape, and realized that her fate just wasn't headed that way. Her demise hadn't begun. Her rise was on its way, and she followed with her eyes as the sun continued. Every day you see Poppy. Poppy wasn't her name. She was born of different seed, but Poppy she became when names get thrown by fear and greed. Yes, she was tall. Yes, she was bright. And others afraid tried to smother her light, but her heart, it wasn't blood red. It was golden, like the sun. And she followed its movements from the moment it rose until it was done. She left the streets with a knowing that every fallen flower is a curse. That this world will become infertile if it keeps crushing all its girls. She let her back stand up straight, let her petals unfurl. She would claim back her own name. She would inspire all the world. You see, Poppy. You see, she is not a poppy. She never has been. She is a sunflower growing, and she is full of ripening seeds. And the thing about a sunflower that's so special, you see, is it's impossible to just pass one by without taking a moment to dream. You know, like, oh, well, if I had a garden. Or, well, then maybe when I get back home, or maybe I'll plant sunflowers just so I can watch them grow. So she lives like this, leaving in her path a trail of scattered sunflower seeds and a field of blooming hearts, each rising with each other to see how bright they can become, each turning to each other, each made of earth and sun. And the truth of this story is that every single one of us, sitting here in our rooms, whether we're a poppy or a sunflower, we all deserve the right to bloom.
That was so good. Thank you so much for that.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah. So tell me, what was it about it that really spoke to you?
So I guess what spoke to it, to me personally, would be someone has always been trying to tie each other down and make each other not shine. And we're all meant to shine and inspire and lift each other. And that's really what it got to for me.
Yeah, and I think that it's really, I mean, this poem I feel like is kind of a summary of it's like my passion. It's really what my passion is about, is that idea that, you know, like, yeah, I was bullied growing up. And I think a lot of us were. And even if we weren't bullied in the traditional sense, we've all been bullied by society, we've been bullied by media, we've been told that we shouldn't be who we feel like we are in some way. And I think what I really believe is that when we actually do shine, when we do let ourselves shine, it gives permission to other people to do the same. And actually, the more that we let ourselves be ourselves, the more we let ourselves shine through, the more other people feel safe to do the same themselves. And I think that's how we create a better world, a world where we're actually a world of people who are being themselves rather than a world of people who are faking it the whole fucking time.
Absolutely. And also being in the activist community, because I do a lot of activism work, mm-hmm. Everybody's like, oh, well, I couldn't do what you're doing. I can't be that. You're, you know, something different. It's like, no, we are all, if we can do it, anyone can do it. We can all lift each other up. But so many people feel so beaten down, they can never even start.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've never moved in a community as self-deprecating and not to insult anybody, but like I spent many years living in protest camps and living in tree sits and stuff, and, you know, chaining myself to roads. And I've never met a community of people that is so... That's like, there's a big struggle with self-worth.
Absolutely.
And I know that in England I felt like if I was in the anarchist community or in the kind of activism community, that I had to fit within a certain, with what it looked like to be a certain way. So I had to have basically no money. I had to be living off the government. I had to not have a home or a place to live. I had to, like, all these things that I felt like were the conditions that made me be a good person. Because if I was outside of that, then I clearly wasn't a good person. But then even when I'm inside that, I'm still not a good person, and I hate the system and I hate the state. And so I turn that hate onto myself, and we end up drinking and we end up taking drugs and we end up, you know, like smoking cigarettes all day and every day and drinking the cheapest alcohol we can find. And it ends up like there's so much light and there's so much strength and there's so much force and power in the activists and the activist community. But it's definitely a community in which that I really did notice that sense of keeping ourselves small. And it's not necessarily about even other people keeping us small. Often it is ourselves keeping ourselves small. All the things, the stories that we create about what we have to do to be whatever we perceive to be a good person or the right kind of person or an acceptable person or whatever that is, even, you know, even in, within a community that prides itself on being unacceptable, you know, like a community, you know. You could turn up and not have it, not like, you know, not have cared about what you were wearing or like even had a shower that morning, and that's completely fine. But like, there's still, that doesn't mean that there isn't these self-imposed like systems on what it is to be someone who is acceptable, and the kind of the keeping ourselves small in that. Is that making sense?
No, it actually really kind of is that.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people in the activist community that I personally have interacted with, you know, you're so, I don't want to say damaged by society, but you feel that pain of society so much is why you are an activist.
Yeah.
But it's a whole community of people that are feeling that same, like, beaten down by the system and by society.
Yeah. And it becomes internalized, you see. And it's just, it's an incredible community of people doing incredible things. Like, I'm still an activist in my own, like, I feel like the work that I'm doing is my form of activism now. And it's like, these are the, like, the activist community is such a force to be reckoned with. At the same time, we are carrying the weight of all the fucked up things that humans are doing to each other and to the planet. And that gets internalized. And then society's perceptions of us and who we are gets internalized. I mean, these days, there's a slightly more, like, mainstream, like, activism has changed a lot in the last 10 years. The way society perceives it. And maybe that's just outside of the UK, but I know in the UK, like, activists looked a very specific way. If you wouldn't use the word activist unless you were, you know, a frontliner,
right,
punky street kid kind of. That's what an activist looked like. These days, you get people who are like corporate activists. You get like, you get this whole, this much more consumable or much more mainstream or much more like, palatable version of what activism looks like, which I think is amazing. It means that more and more people are opening themselves up to being activists. But we definitely, I think, as a community, there's a lot of self-deprecation there. But even outside, I mean, I was just using that as an example, but it really is everywhere. I think it's in almost every community I've moved through. There is something that where people have been told that they are not good enough as who they are naturally, and so they have to change or they have to pretend to be something else. And it's sad. It's really sad. And it's destroying people. Like, we see mental health, the levels of mental health issues going up, the levels of addiction going up, the levels of suicide, the levels of, like, of malicious attacks, of murder, of all this stuff, which is all, for me, they're all symptoms of a disconnected society, of people who don't feel worthy. And so they either project stuff on themselves or they project stuff on other people. And they say that because somebody looks different or because somebody lives a different lifestyle or because whatever, then they have to destroy them, or because I live a different lifestyle or I look different or I feel different or whatever it is, that I deserve to be lesser. And it's just bullshit. It really is. And actually, when we strip it all back, there's so much worth in every single one of us.
Absolutely. Oh, it's been great talking to you. Kind of catharsis, even.
There was one more thing I wanted to say around the Tall Poppy poem, and I think that's something that I wonder whether it actually comes across to Americans. It's the reason why I asked if you're in America. And that is because there's a term in Australia and in England called being a tall poppy. And I don't think that's a term that gets used. No. So in Australia and in England, there's a real culture of if you big yourself up, if you say anything about your success, if you talk anything about something that you're good at, that you're being a tall poppy and therefore you should be cut down.
Ah, okay.
That no one wants to be a tall poppy. Don't be a tall poppy. You know, this kind of thing. And it's a big social, and that's really like, I mean, that's really what I was talking about also with it, what I experienced when I was personally living very strongly in the activist world. But it was also, it's just cultural throughout England and throughout Australia. The more I moved into the mainstream world, I realized it was just as rife there as it is anywhere else. And it's this idea of like, don't look successful. Don't appear to be talented. Don't appear to be clever. To the point that, like, when I was at school, it was cool to be stupid. You know, everyone played down their intelligence. You play down your skills because that's what makes you cool. And it's crap. It's absolute bull crap because it doesn't actually support any of us. It doesn't support any of us at all. And so that, like, that poem, I think a lot of it translates to the States, but that key, the kind of the wordplay in it doesn't always transfer over.
But the feelings definitely do. And, you know, the analogy too of like poppies growing low to the ground and sunflowers reaching up and turning towards the sun, like that is universal. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I've loved this conversation. It's been great.
You're welcome. I hope I haven't insulted too many activists out there.
I don't think you have. I think most activists are fairly self-reflective and know why they're activists and why that pull's there. And
everything I say is self-reflection. It's all from my own journey and from what I've witnessed in my own life. So yeah, I'm fully.
And thank you for joining us here today. We really appreciate every one of you that listens to us. And I hate to keep asking this, but we always do need your help. We don't take any corporate money here on NJRR. We would only take money from very well approved, like local co-ops or small businesses. So really it comes down to personal donations. And if you like us covering the news stories you're not hearing everywhere else, long form interviews with activists to inspire you, and just not the normal corporate bullshit, then go to our website, njrevolutionradio.com, and click on that contribute button. We have Patreon, Venmo, PayPal, all kinds of ways you can donate. If you give us $10 a month, we especially call you out and thank you on the air. And we have some special insider gifts that we're going to be working on in the near future. So you probably really want to get one of those. And thank you for joining us. The future is yours to create. Go out there and create it.